Welcome back to RBKD. You can always be a part of the show. All you got to do is hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babison. Twitter. My man Kevin Dunn is at KevinDunn01. Cameron, actually, Twisting Twisting Dials here. My man Patrick Davis had to head on. He's a Renaissance man. I had to go head over to Texas basketball.
I think he
Texas
left Hoops. His parking pass.
No.
It's next Tuesdays.
Oh, it is? Okay.
I saw it in the bathroom, Ooh. And I was like,
Okay.
Man. Yeah, that. Oh, yeah, because parking down there is a pain in the you know what. Man, I would like to know how much money Texas makes off parking.
I don't know. Ton. Whenever we did. Millions. Remember we did the show before the game at the Drome a couple months ago?
Mm-hmm.
It may have just been that night. They were really cool because they let us out for free.
Oh, they did, but they left out because they wanted, they had the, like, I think, all of the foundation parking coming in there. The big money was coming
in. So they
in.
Wanted you to get out.
Yeah, because the big money complains about,
right.
you know, my little piece of crap car out there blocking one of their premium spots. You know, they're gonna hear it. You don't want to hear it if you don't want it for big money. So they'll easily let us out for not having to pay our, what, $7, $8?
Right.
So big money can roll in there and park. You know, in the premium spot. That's what that was all about.
Get out of here,
yeah.
you
Smart
peasants.
Move. Exactly. Get out of here, Gin Pop.
Gin Pop.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. But, yeah, so my man Cameron doing a great job. At Cameron D. Parker.
Yes, sir.
In the Twitterverse. There you go. All right, so we'll get into, well, we actually could get back to some of the NFL action. Also,
yeah.
we'll talk some UT hoops here. But there are some spring battles to watch at UT. And this article actually came out yesterday talking about spring battles to watch at UT. I think we all can kind of get in on this conversation. You too, Cameron, because there's a lot of excitement now, as there always is, for Texas during spring. But because basically Sark had such a disastrous season, 5-7, not making a bowl game, and then had that combined with one of the best off seasons Texas has had in a really, really long time. It's just weird to kind of see those two things. I mean, usually one would affect the other, but the bad season Texas had didn't really affect the offseason. They actually had a ton of momentum in the offseason. Yes, name, image, and likeness played a big role for that, so shout out to the Clark Field Collective, and shout out to Horns with Heart. We appreciate all that. The Pancake Factory, all that makes a difference, but you also got to give some props to the coaching staff for, you know, basically not only grinding on the recruiting trail, but also, you know, trying to harness a lot of this momentum. And they didn't let the 5-7 campaign kind of have a negative cloud over the offseason, which we thought it all would.
Yeah, look, Texas had obviously a much worse year than Texas A&M, but Texas A&M also had much bigger expectations, like playoff mm-hmm. expectations.
Yep.
And they go 8-4,
yeah,
which wasn't great, considering what you expected. And they had an unbelievable, historic offseason. Texas is behind that, where they had a worse season, less expectations, but still a bad year. And both programs took a huge momentum into the offseason.
I'm with you.
And have been
that.
Carrying it.
So if I ask you what position battle is, which one interests you the most in the spring? I was going to ask you which one is going to be the most important, but I think that's different than which one interests you the most, maybe.
Yeah.
In terms of position battles.
That's a good question.
Maybe two. Which one interests you the most, and then which one you think is the most important for the team's success overall?
The most important is going to be offensive line.
Okay.
And so you can think that Jake Majors is probably going to be your center. I mean, I think there's some spots we can look at and say we think we know who's going to be there. But the offensive line just has to be better. So mm-hmm. I don't care, especially with the influx of Kelvin Banks.
Yep.
And then hopefully also DJ Campbell.
Could get some more, yeah.
And could get some more, maybe transfer portal. And all of a sudden those guys come in. And if I'm Kyle Flood, I just open it up and say, look, we were awful last year. We can't ever be that again.
Yeah.
I don't care which one of you steps up, but I got to find five. And it's wide ass open. And I may even move you around a little bit. That is the most important, because the offensive line can't look like that. You could definitely say the run defense, and so the edge on the flip side. But I'm with you. I think they get Mathis, and Mathis is a day one mm-hmm. starter. I know linebacker opposite of Overshown is an intriguing one.
It is.
But for me, the most interest is probably going to be with the secondary. And I know I'm opening that up, and I'm not just giving you one. Mm-hmm. We can get into specific battles, but I'm not just giving you one position. Because the whole unit wasn't good, Rod.
Yeah.
And they weren't even tested like they could have been. They could have looked a lot worse.
Yeah. I mean, I think they are lucky that a lot of teams in the Big 12 are run-oriented teams.
Right.
And actually, they were exposed in terms of their rush defense, in terms of how the tracking the football, how the safeties run the alley, tackling in the open field. We get that. You got to be able to play football in terms of being a run defender and also a pass defender. But I think teams, even though they were strange, teams were actually down double digits against Texas. And when I go back and watch the games, it's amazing. They would choose to run the ball, whether it's pass the ball. Usually teams get down, they choose to throw the ball, which gives you an advantage defensively because it makes them one-dimensional, and then you can rush the passer. Texas was really bad, historically bad, actually, at rushing the passer this year. They didn't have a perennial pass rusher, a guy that could beat one-on-one and affect the quarterback. And it didn't work out either way. When they did force teams to throw the ball, they didn't have a pass rush to affect the quarterback. Yeah. So teams like West Virginia had like 3rd-and-10, 3rd-and-13, 3rd-and-18.
And they even got a couple
and
sacks
were able to convert them.
In that game.
No, they got 2 sacks in a row, right. Forced 3rd-and-18, and first West down. Virginia converted.
And it felt like a 3rd-and-3 pitch.
Exactly. So when you have 3rd-and-long, but you don't have pressure or the ability to pressure the quarterback, 3rd-and-long doesn't matter as much. It doesn't flip the odds in favor of the defense. And then rush defense, when you're allowing 5.2 yards per rush, second most all time in the history of the program, then, yeah, teams decide, you know what, I'm going to work smarter, not harder against this damn team. I'm just going to run the ball right against them. Even when they were down double digits, they just said they'll run it against Texas because it was that easy to do so.
Yeah, and that should embarrass you as a defender, Rod.
It should, yeah, because, you know, they should have the respect for you to go, you know what, we're down.
We got to throw
it. We're down 2 scores. We got to throw it. Otherwise, we'll never get back in this game. No, they were patient and deliberate in knowing that, no. We've watched film on this Texas defense. They get really bad. And they get worse throughout the game at rush defense. They may start out good, but once the fit hits the shed, once their conditioning is exposed, once we get to the fourth quarter, and once we get to the mental toughness area of this game where it's all about testicular fortitude and it's all about grit and determination, they will fold like a cheap suit, like wet toilet paper on the edge. You'll go right through it. And they did. Remember, Baylor said it. Baylor said it.
Wet toilet paper.
And that Texas defense was that. Remember, Baylor said it. Baylor said, oh, no, we knew.
Yeah, we knew.
Those linebackers were going to overrun plays like they did. We knew.
Smith postgame said that.
They literally called Texas out.
Yeah.
And said, oh, no, we knew they didn't have the ability to tackle us in open field, that they couldn't set the edge, that they couldn't track the football, that their pursuit was bad. Yeah. I mean, all of those things. So, but a lot of that, going back to your initial point, is from the secondary.
Yep.
And I mean, you go look at missed tackles on this team. I mean, I guess I can pull it up so we can look at it. Pro Football Focus has official numbers on it. But the leaders are all in the secondary. I mean, you go look at the leaders. Josh Thompson, 11 missed tackles. Jaron Thompson, 15 missed tackles. B.J. Foster, 10 missed tackles. You know, the linebackers were really bad, too. DeMarvion Overshone led the team. But, I mean, you go look at the secondary. You didn't really have a true, legit alley cat, telling us a safety that can run the alley, track the football. And I heard my man Michael Griffin talking about this because he's an NFL player, so he can break it down.
Tracked pretty well.
He did. But you know what he was talking about on LHN? That it
by the
made
way, quickly, that the interception in the Bills game, the
oh
one,
my God.
7-0,
the Hyde,
Mac Jones.
Is it the Hyde?
It
one?
Was Hyde.
Wow.
That
it did
that brought
look,
me flashbacks.
It did look like a that
playing
Griff
that center
pick
field,
in
yeah,
USC.
Coming out of nowhere.
Yeah. No, it was that was amazing. That pick was amazing. Like that was ooh, that gave me goosebumps. That
all right,
was,
so
that
anyway,
was freaky.
What was Griff talking about?
But Griff talks about canceling gaps, right? And you can tell he was thinking about it as a safety. But as a safety, you are now if your rush defense is doing their job, you are supposed to be able to somewhat predict where the ball is going to break,
where it's
right?
going to squirt,
where it's going to squirt out. You're supposed to be able to predict that based on where the gaps are canceled. So you're like, well, the it's going to pop here because my DN is he's closing down the C gap. My linebacker is going to come and crash the D gap. So I know, you know what? They're not going to pop it outside. All right. Because they're going to set the edge. So I can actually predict that run is going to pop in the interior. So I adjust my angle when I come downhill. When I'm rotating from that safety position, I'll adjust my angle and it'll be a little bit more, it'll be a little bit more interior oriented angle as opposed to a guy trying to get to the outside. Our safeties, and maybe it's because our rush defense has that many holes in it and it's just that dysfunctional, if you will.
And guys who were supposed to set edges. Either,
they don't. Exactly.
Even if they set them in, it was improper set.
Exactly.
Or edge. I mean,
yeah.
To where you get too
wrong
vertical.
Wrong
shoulder.
Yep.
Or just create
bad
too
leverage.
Much space.
Totally agree. Even if you're, yeah, I've seen it multiple times. So I don't think the safeties can predict where the ball is going to pop most times because they don't have confidence that their teammates are going to cancel the gaps that they're supposed to cancel. Cancel the A gap, cancel the B gap. Oh, they got to be going to the C gap because my boy outside, he's going to cancel that D gap. Ain't no damn way they going outside, because when Joseph Osai was out there, you're like, okay, they no damn way they're going to run to the outside on Osai's side and get to the edge. It just ain't going to happen.
Right.
So as a safety, you know that in your mind, like, well, I'll adjust my angle every time. I'm not coming outside Joseph Osai. Maybe every now and then I have to, but they'll probably have to bubble it so damn deep to get around Osai that I'll have time to adjust my angle.
That is such
trust your teammates to do that, though.
There's so much more to your point than just setting the edge. It's about trusting your teammates.
Yeah, I trust my teammates to do that.
And I understand if you don't trust them, your teammates. We've talked about that, but I can't call them out because I'm not doing my job.
You ain't doing your job. When he did pop to the open field, you didn't tackle him.
Right.
So you're not doing your job. So I think there's a lot in there, but I remember specifically Mike Griff talking about canceling gaps because I remember it in my head as a person in the nickel position thinking the same thing, like, okay, I know that coach told me that I'm responsible for the run here and I have run responsibilities, but I got a Casey Hampton inside and a Sean Rogers. There's not a really good chance they're going to pop it inside, so I'm just going to focus on the edge here. There were times where I was almost using an off-ball linebacker as a nickel, right, because they had like an inline tight end thing, but I was going to
and you would have been playing
Nebraska
nickel with Aaron Humphrey,
day.
Too.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I'm thinking to myself,
99?
So yeah, exactly. So I'm adjusting, like, well, I know when A Hump used to rush, A Hump would, he would love to go speed rush sometimes all the way to the outside. So if somebody would pop something, it was going to come usually through
inside,
his gap.
Right.
It was going to, but he would cancel out the D gap. So I'd have to have responsibility for was that C gap there.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's, so I don't think the players are thinking through the game. It's pretty obvious when you watch it that they're not thinking the game through.
Really interesting stuff, especially coming from you. And so you've got some young guys. I mean, Gilbo's going to be in, Terrence Brooks. Ryan Watt is going to be transferring in. So how does that play out with the guys they already have coming back? Jameson's been here for Kevin Wattler years, it feels
forever.
Like.
Yeah.
Jaron Thompson. And then who else am I missing? B.J. Allen's coming in.
Yeah.
So to me, that's going to be fascinating to watch, just which one of these young guys, if any, can come in and actually push some of these veterans who – haven't been very good.
You might have two freshmen starting in that secondary. I know that sounds crazy to people, but Terrence Brooks is someone to keep an eye on because he can play multiple positions. Remember, his dad is the former Aggie, right?
Yeah.
But also, his dad is a DB coach, like an independent DB coach. So he's well beyond his years. He's an old soul. And I've heard great things about B.J. Allen. Like, great things.
I have,
too. Speaking of running the alley, being able to tackle in the open field, maybe he's one of those guys. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go, you know what? The gap between the veteran player that we have and the freshman coming in is not significant enough, and that means the young guy probably has much more upside than the veteran. Let's just go with the younger guy, and we'll deal with the growing pains. But by week 6 or 8, he'll be a better player than that veteran would have been.
Offensive line just makes sense, what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
no doubt.
That's going to be so important just to figure that out. We'll see how many new faces we see. Let me ask the question to you. What's the most important? Which one are you most intrigued by?
I think with you, I'm most intrigued by, and I guess it's a little biased
here, spring here.
But I'm most intrigued by the secondary. I am. Because I think you're going to see a lot of new faces in the secondary. I think that because of the disappointing performance last season with no one really stepping. I don't think about Anthony Cook actually had.
Anthony Cook was most consistent player.
Anthony Cook was probably, the most consistent player.
And that's
player
also
in that
part
secondary
of what we're talking about. Do you pop him out? Do you keep him inside?
That is something you can look at, too. And that's another thing about the versatility of some of the young players you're bringing in and some of the players you have. I wonder where they'll move those different pieces around and where they'll play. So, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if you see two freshmen starting in that secondary early on. And I know that, like, I can't even think of the last time that happened at Texas. You got to probably go back to maybe like 08, something like that. I mean, because I think Earl Thomas
was
a redshirt freshman.
And he was Earl Thomas.
I want to say, and Blake Gideon was young too.
He was true freshman.
You had a true freshman and a redshirt freshman. So you might have to go back to 2008 last time it happened, but that was a really talented group.
Yeah.
And
you had more talent around him. So with you are running alleys, you had a better front seven.
I agree with that, brother. And that we can agree on.
You've got a Rock Poe. You've just got different guys.
Yeah.
All right. Some of the other ones that you're kind of looking at.
And the one I think
wide receiver will be interesting. But if everyone stays healthy, don't we kind of know what we have there?
Yeah, but I think if you're Sark, you can't be full-hearted enough to assume the health at that position. That's going off faith alone, because there's no evidence that Jordan Whittington will stay healthy. There's no evidence that Troy Murray will stay healthy. You can't take that chance. So either you bring in reinforcements via the transfer portal, or you build your game plans with the almost anticipating that, what if I don't have those guys? Jordan Whittington has found money for you. And so is Troy O'Meara. They got to be found money for you. So you build those game plans around your 21 personnel, your 20 personnel, the new tight end you bring in, and X-Man. And I know that sounds like that's mean-spirited, but that's what when guys have an injury history like that, that's how you have to approach it. That's a responsible way as a coach to approach
just
it.
Just being smart.
He's like, yeah. And if they make it through the season, great.
We love you, kid.
We love you.
We want you to be healthy.
Yeah, but you can't depend on that as a coach.
No.
That's just not right. That's just not smart.
Cameron, to you, what's the most important spring position battle?
Most important, I would say offensive line and receiver. And receiver with the caveat that I feel like those are both positions that have not been addressed in the portal yet. Mm. I think going into this offseason, everyone kind of assumed, okay, offensive line and receiver were going to be the two positional groups that were going to be hit the hardest by the staff. And maybe after spring, or it's going to be a lot more kids transferring, maybe they have an ace up their sleeve. Not really sure, but I think offensive line, because there's so many freshmen coming in, but asking a true freshman to start in the Big 12 for Texas is a little bit scary. And the same thing with Rod.
We may have to, though.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. which is very frightening, because I want to see how Jake Majors progresses, how Logan Parr progresses. A lot of questions there. And then receivers, if Xavier Worthy goes down, this receiving group is is it top three, top five in the Big 12?
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. That's a concern.
And guys,
depth, period.
Funny thing, in the one position we didn't talk about, maybe there's assumptions already being put in there, but we're going to have a battle for quarterback in the spring, right?
That's the most exciting battle, I think, because I think everyone assumes it's going to be yours, right?
Yes.
But
yeah.
I want to see how Malik Murphy looks, if he's really as raw as everyone says he is, how yours looks, because we saw him hand the ball off twice at Ohio State, not really sure what he looks like, and then Hudson Carr. Maybe he just improves drastically this offseason.
Yeah. No, Hudson Card, a lot of it was composure, right? We talked about it. He had happy feet, and it just felt too fast and too big for him with a crappy offensive line. I get it. He wouldn't help that a lot.
Yeah. No, I'm intrigued by the quarterback position and the battle, but I believe at one point, even if it's close, Sark will call the quarterback competition for Quinn Ewers. That's why I don't listen, because Quinn Ewers is going to be the guy. Even if it's close, like I said, and we've had close quarterback competition before, ask Chance Mock about it.
Yeah.
All right? A coach reserves the right to just say, you know what, I'm calling the competition, I'm going with Vincent Paul Young.
Right.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chance.
Yeah.
All right? Or, you know what I mean? It's happened. Mack did it. He did it with Chris Sims and Majors.
Like,
now I'm calling it for this guy.
A couple years before that, it was Richard Walton and Greg Cicero.
We've come a long way.
We have come a long way.
But yeah, so I think he'll just call it for Quinn Ewers, and I feel bad for Hudson Card, but I think he understands. That's probably why, you know, Casey Thompson was out. He's like, I'm out.
Yeah, and then at that point, if he gets beat out, don't be shocked if Hudson is out.
I think that will happen.
God, there have been so many quarterbacks all over the place.
And no, now it's a regular thing for a starting quarterback to hit the transfer portal.
Right.
So I think Hudson Card ultimately by the start of next season, I think he'll be out. Because I think the spring, Sark doesn't even want this competition spilling over to the offseason so that there is division in the locker room. I think he's going to give it to him in the spring. Call it.
Really?
I think he might call it out in the spring.
So this doesn't hit the summer?
Because what's the point? Like, right?
Right.
You just brought in a once-in-a-generation quarterback. What do you bring him in for? Really?
Recruiting? No.
Exactly. Where do we live in? We know what you brought him in for. I don't think Sark's going to dilly-dally around with it. I think he's going to give the job to yours. Now, we may want to keep Hudson Card around to have a backup next season, but come on, man.
That would be the argument, right?
Yeah, you can't do that anymore, though. Quarterbacks, they know the writing's on the wall. They're going to hit the transfer portal.
Well,
you can try
also,
to do it,
we also talked about that this last year.
Yeah.
And they didn't get good quarterback play. Now, you kept both of them.
You kept both of them. But I think Hudson Card, before it's all said and done, maybe it's not before next season, but I think he's hitting the transfer portal the next calendar year.
That would be my guess as well.
Yeah.
All right, some Texas football for you there. We got Texas basketball tonight. We'll preview K-State up next.
Today's music ain't got the same
Oh, yeah. This is a classic.
This is a classic.
Bob Dunn and I listened to this album like over and over driving down to the coast one time.
Just this song or the album that the song was on?
Just Bob Seger.
Oh, okay.
Who this is, Bob Seger. Yeah.
Okay.
But like he's got like a greatest hits album, which I know the Chad Hastings of the world would be like, greatest hits album. Yeah, you dumbass. We're not all snobs like you are.
Is he not a Bob Seger fan?
No, he's not a greatest hits guy.
Oh, what you mean? Well, how you be not be a greatest hits guy?
Because it's music snobbery.
Hold up. So if any artist come out with a greatest hits album, he's anti
he
that
likes
album?
To listen. He thinks every album is telling a story.
Oh, that's a bunch of bull.
From the artist.
That's a bunch
of So you know
bull.
What he does? Like he used to?
I know. That's a
like
bunch
I remember giving him CDs back in the day.
He listened to the whole thing front to back.
Yeah, and he wanted to make sure, though, that he had the album cover. And he goes through that listening front to back and trying to find whatever the hidden message is.
You know what? Okay, I will say this.
Like
back
hidden
in,
message?
No,
I just
no,
gave
no.
you Tupac.
He is right now. I will say this. Back in the day, that may have been true. Back in the day, there were hidden messages.
Yeah, there were.
Remember, they were like secret songs on albums and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You played it backwards.
Yeah,
you hear
exactly,
something.
Right.
All these. Back in the day, there was some of that stuff. I do remember that. Now, I don't think they have that because we live in the kind of the Apple, you know, the iTunes music universe where people buy songs instead of buying albums.
Yes.
So they don't make albums like that anymore because they know nobody's going to listen to an album like that anymore. People listen to songs, not albums. People listen to the first 15, 20 seconds of a song to see if they want to buy it rather than buy the whole album. Now, for some great art, maybe Kanye does stuff like that. Maybe some artists still do that, but I doubt it because that's not how we consume music anymore.
No.
We don't consume it by the entire. I remember No Skips, right? I remember, oh, dude, you buy a CD that was so good you didn't have to skip any song. That was considered epic.
Yeah,
it was like 50 Cent Get Rich or Die Trying. I was like, oh, no skips.
And it was
I
even more important with cassette tapes because cassette tapes, that was a pain. Remember,
it,
you had
it
to,
was to fast forward.
I mean, Cameron, you don't know this. You had to fast forward and you go, I think it's right about I think it's right here.
Oh man,
whammy. Then you check that. Oh damn, I went way too far.
Oh, man.
You'd spend 10 minutes just trying to get close to the song.
And don't do it too much because you could
screw
up the tape.
Screw
you mess up the tape, man.
I did that a couple times.
Oh, no. Yeah. And you gotta use a pencil to wind that thing back up. Oh, man. Man, first world problems back in the day.
Technology has really changed our life.
It
you think
really
about
has.
Us, because we were as kids and oh, what it's man. Like now in our 40s. I mean, we bitch about it and have fun with or,
oh,
you know,
man.
But it's changed everything.
Oh, no. I mean, I as a young man, the struggles we had, like, they don't. I mean, Cameron, you know the struggles of trying to find adult entertainment back in the day.
Do you know what Scramble Channel is?
We had this conversation.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
see?
We did.
Exactly. You know, God, they know that.
That's how old we're getting.
You didn't
we're
know.
Turning into that now.
But I had a struggle. They
guys, we've done this before.
Yeah.
Mom, we've had this conversation.
You've told me this story four times in the last year. No, but I've been saying that technology exists now. They
just
go.
You drape yourself in velvet.
Yeah.
I grew up on VHS tapes, though.
There you go.
I was probably one of the few kids who had one, but we had one, and a lot of our movies were on VHS, and I had someone give me all of Seinfeld on VHS.
Ooh,
and,
what? Mm. Bill's character. Good for you.
Yeah, I have all of Seinfeld on VHS.
I do not. I guess I'm not
don't
a
need
true
it.
Seinfeld fan.
No, I was going. It was at the time. And
well,
I was,
you actually
I was going through
recorded
chemo.
Them on off the television, correct?
Right, on Channel 2 at 9:30
like while they appeared live. That
no,
is-
no, not that. I was doing reruns.
Oh, you're doing right.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, that's pretty amazing, though, that you were able to get it.
Still have it.
To get all the whole, like, the entire show?
Yes.
On VHS.
I had, except for non-Larry David parts. Oh, you know me with that.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right. Let's move on.
I have, like, 400 VHS here. Tapes. I was going through it the other day. No, it's not that impressive, Cameron. Especially when women see it now. Back then, it was like, okay, you're one of those guys, you know. But now it's like, why do you still have this?
But they're sentimental. The Seinfeld thing, chicks should understand.
Thank you.
But the football games.
Maybe I can date you.
Yeah, the football games.
Rod understands.
The chicks won't understand the football.
No, they don't.
You keeping a football game from 1993 is not going to resonate with the ladies.
But your
Seinfeld tapes will.
Seinfeld
that's a good story. That's a good story.
Because I play the cancer card, and I love turning that around. Why do you have every Seinfeld? That's so weird, because I was dying. And it's one of the main reasons with, well, science and the doctors, that I'm still here. And faith.
It was the joy of laughter.
It was mainly Seinfeld.
That's such a Costanza thing to say, too. I love it.
The cancer card, I'm surprised it wasn't a Seinfeld episode, actually.
Turn it around,
baby.
Well,
it kind of was. Remember the guy fake cancer to get a present?
It was John Lovitz, wasn't it?
It was John Lovitz. Yes. Yeah, it was.
Well, he was getting a parking space, and then he got a tube. I think Jerry got him a whole deal where he could get his tube, go in there.
It was a gift because of the cancer.
Do you remember the guy who was running the shop? Who said,
oh, yes.
All you people with hair. Because
that's the guy that got George one.
You're so great.
Right?
Because
he's the same guy, I think.
George comes in. He's all cocky. How you doing? God, that show was so damn good.
That was great. What an underrated episode.
Nothing beats it. All right, we got Texas and Kansas State tonight. Kansas State's actually coming off, 13-4, but they're coming off a big win. They actually beat Texas Tech, who we knew was super hot, and they beat them 62-51. Look, the Kansas State team, the Texas faced in Manhattan, what, they had six guys ready to go?
Yeah.
Seven guys.
They barely made it.
They didn't have their head coach, and they're up by 6 points, guys, going into the half. If Texas has that type of intensity, it won't be six. They're going to be down 10, 12, 15. I don't think that'll happen, but I think this should be a hell of a game. And like Big 12, it's going to be very defensive oriented.
Yeah, one thing we know about Chris Beard, at least in his short time here, is that when they do have a down performance and there are specific elements of the team and the game that he can dissect and focus on, and he'll prioritize those things to improve upon in the next game, right? In their next matchup, whatever it may be. And there was a ton to improve on from that last performance versus Iowa State. I think
take care of the basketball.
Boom. The biggest headline was turnovers. You had 20 turnovers in that game. I believe they ended up with 23 points off of those turnovers, 13 fast break points off of those turnovers. That's something that Texas should be able to control. All right. That's one of those, I think Tom Herman always said, the controllables. It's one of those controllables. And then most of those, I think the disappointment was from Chris Beard was that a lot of it was in the front court. That a lot of it was, he had 9 of those turnovers, I believe, were by forwards when they were, like you said, trying to work the offense inside out.
And Trey Mitchell and Dessou combined for 7.
7 of those. Yeah. So I think that's some of the frustration. So if you want to look at any one specific factor that you think the team will improve on from last game to this game, I'd bet money that it will be turnovers. They probably will try to cut that number in half, if not better.
How important is Marcus Carr in this game, Cam?
I think pretty important because I don't know if Timmy Allen's going to match up against Nigel Pack, but Nigel Pack is nasty. He leads his team, I think, 50 points per game. And really the reason why Kansas State was
15,
leading.
Right?
15,
okay,
yeah. I said 50.
Like,
no.
Damn.
Wow. But that first game when they're up by 6, Nigel Pack just went off in that first half. So I think Marcus Carr, who had his best game of the season against Kansas State in that first matchup, I think he had 19 points, 7 rebounds and 5 assists.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, okay, this is a Marcus Carr.
Yeah.
And then he kind of fades away. So I think if he has another big night tonight, because like you mentioned, they're going to have their full roster. It's not going to be the same team we saw in Manhattan a few weeks ago.
No, it's not. Andrew Jones has been red hot, guys.
He's been feeling good, man.
Jones is feeling it as he was coming out of that like COVID protocol, but he's combined for 40 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. And shooting the ball really well in the last two games. He's been the guy. Got to get some from Courtney Ramey. And, Rod, you're exactly right. Just all of them in general have to take care of the basketball better.
Yeah, they actually was shooting a decent percentage in that Iowa State game. We talked about it.
Right.
It was like 44%, somewhere around
there.
For them,
it was enough to win.
It was actually pretty good.
You just can't turn the ball over and then give up that many points off turnovers. Yeah. And a lot of those were threes, too.
Yeah.
Iowa State's hitting threes, and you're just putting a hole.
And that's something we didn't talk about, too. Iowa State had a magnificent offensive performance. Remember, they were shooting, I think in the second half of that game, they were shooting at close to 60%. In the second half of that game, they shot 56% overall. I don't think, even going against Texas defense, which we consider elite, I don't think that this Texas opponent, K-State, will replicate that offensive performance. I mean, Iowa State just had one of their best offensive games of the year against one of the better defenses in the country.
Right.
Yeah.
This is an important one. It's at home. K-State's a good team, but, I mean, it seems like every team in the Big 12 is going to be a tough opponent or could be a tough opponent if you don't take them seriously. But this is one you got to get, and that schedule is going to get only tougher and tougher. And so got to get this one. Baylor did finish off West Virginia, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so Baylor won that. Kansas leads Oklahoma 33-30. That thing is about to hit the half. And so, man, this is just going to be a loaded Big 12. Should be a lot of fun. But the home games, you got to get those, y'all.
Yeah, because Texas is not good on the road. They just haven't, been. They're not the same team on
no,
the road.
No, they haven't been. And even with some of the road wins like the one in Manhattan, there are reasons for it.
COVID helped them out.
COVID helped them out with the first two games.
Yeah, they did.
And West Virginia's actually looked pretty good as well. Guys, I think it's Marcus Carr. Marcus Carr, he's got to get more in rhythm. And he's just got to, you know, he's going to be the guy that is going to engineer stuff, but also when they need bailouts, I think he's going to be their bailout guy.
Yeah, be nice if you know, Andrew Jones can stay on his hot streak, and if not, Courtney Ramey. I mean, he's the other option. Those one of those three guys has to be on for you.
Right.
Marcus Carr, Courtney Ramey, or Andrew Jones. One of them's got to be on for me. If you get all three of those guys having an off night, it's going to be a long night.
Is Dessou just kind of getting his feet set right here? Because early on we saw him when he first came back, and obviously he was playing limited minutes as he's getting into basketball or to game playing shape, but he looked like he was going to be the best big guy and could be kind of a difference maker. But that's kind of in Big 12 play fell off a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think we know. Maybe he's struggling with what his role is with the team.
I think they're all trying to figure out how all this thing's going to come together and work.
Totally agree.
And as we've talked about it, they're not the only one. They're just a heightened case of it because they've got so many new guys.
Yep.
And then you face an Iowa State, and it's like, well, we got a Minnesota transfer, too, and we've got some different guys that are coming in. A lot of teams are dealing with it. Texas, we knew that was going to be, look, that was preseason what we said. How does this team come together?
And that's Chris Beard's formula.
Right.
I mean, this has been his formula, even at Tech. He likes the transfer market.
I will say, and I think we're going to get the Craig Way report here, but he's got Chris Beard, and Beard says, you know, essentially says, I need to get some of the effort and energy out of my superstars that I'm getting out of Avery Benson and Lacombe.
Sounds like a challenge.
It's a challenge.
Okay.
We'll see if Texas can meet that. We'll tell you what's on tap.
Pop a top again.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash this town?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been known to drink a beer or two.
I think a man working outdoors feels more like a man if you can have a bottle of suds. It's only my opinion, sir.
I got beer.
I got bottled breast milk.
Why don't we start with the beer?
Okay.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Wait, it's already 5 o'clock here. It's time for What's on Tap.
How about a nice cool drink?
That's really
man,
good.
That's good. That is.
Pop a top again. I've just got time.
Welcome back to RBKD. Got to get out of this one quick. This will be a quickie because we got to get out here. Texas basketball, but we'll let you know what's on tap before we get out of here. But if you missed any part of the show, please go to Horn FM. Go to the podcast page. There you can catch any of the shows that you might have missed today. All right, gentlemen, we're making predictions on Texas K-State.
Texas is going to win this.
They're
a 11-point favorite. I mean, Kansas State's coming off their best win, but they're 9-7. They're 1-4 in conference play. I think Texas will win.
Yeah, and Texas is coming off an embarrassing performance by them.
Bingo.
In terms of
back
turnovers,
home.
Yes, their worst performance of the year. I think they rebound. I think they have a bounce-back game versus K-State. I'm with you. At home, as you pointed out, too. They are a different team offensively at home. Cameron, thoughts?
Kansas State is last in the Big 12 in points per game, field goal percentage in field goals made. Give me Texas.
Wow.
Texas covers minus 10.5.
Against that Texas defense.
Texas
nice
covers.
Nice little nugget. I like that. All right.
Well, you
know
who
to blame if they don't.
Right, exactly. If you've got that K-State offense and this Texas defense, they're going to be trying to break 50.
No, I like that, though. It's a 10-point line, like 10 points?
10 points, saw 11.
All right.
Couple other spots
today. With my man
today.
Cameron on that one. I like that. Mm-hmm. Texas to cover.
Yeah.
Good teams win, great teams cover.
Yeah, for me, it's about Texas just getting back to taking care of the basketball and more of the Texas we saw against Oklahoma. Because those were two different performances. The one here in Austin against the Sooners,
agreed.
And then the next game you go to Ames and just get punked.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
You did the punking here.
Yeah, Mac Brown called it sugar on their back. Yeah, you had too much sugar on your back after that win. then okay. you're feeling good about yourself. And this overinflated sense of yourself after that win. He used to call it, you got too much sugar on your back?
Too much sugar
on your back.
When the sun hits it, it'll caramelize.
So I don't know what that actually, but I think of it like everybody's patting you on the back, telling you how great you are. Yeah. Sugar on your back.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's his former rat poison.
Yay! Mac Brown!
Which goes to show you, Nick Saban talks about rat poison. Mac Brown likes to get dessert on it, little dessert.
Mac Brown's rat poison
like
was
a good
sugar
creme brulee. Give me the torch.
Like a sugar cookie.
Like sugar cookie.
That's a good game.
Oh, hey, Longhorn Blitz podcast tonight. That'll be after the game, so preview quickly.
We talk about Texas football, really get into what Sark needs to address in the offseason. Of course, we talk transfer portal discussion, Gary Patterson as well.
So y'all don't go anywhere. You got Texas pregame coming up next, the tip at 7:30, then Longhorn Blitz podcast after that. We appreciate everyone who's been listening. We are live, we are local, we are digital. Get the Horn app, it'll help out, and also get to hornfm.com. Big shout out to Cameron Parker for coming in, and also to Patrick Davis, who was here for the first couple hours. For the All-American Rod Babers, I am Kevin Dunn. Y'all have a great night, and hook 'em.